gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, rbnrepublicbroadcasting.org. It is the deja vu of free speech, because I think I've been here before. I think I was an unlicensed driver, and I'm reliving this again. I think it's because we started recording, and now we're recording again. I think that's what it is. So go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on the donate button and send the fundage. And then go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send the fundage. Okay, so today we have with us Cato. Cato, welcome to the show.
Yes, glad to be back. Yeah, I know driving how it is. There's not always a signal on the road everywhere you go, so it is what it is. But, man, the United States is getting crazier, and everything's nuts right now. I mean, you had that train derailment in Ohio with all that toxic waste going everywhere, you know, and now you got the fertilizer plant explosion in Florida. I mean, I don't know what to say other than, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it was some, you know, coordinated effort by design. You know, I don't know for sure, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was.
Who knows? Maybe my default assumption is it's just that America's falling apart. Our infrastructure is falling apart. Bridges are just falling down. It's like London Bridge. It's falling down. And why not? We've had 60 years of affirmative action. We are prioritizing trannyism and gayness. We spend gazillions of dollars on foreign wars. We shut down our entire economy. Hey, guess what? Do you think that when we shut down the economy for COVID, that the people who maintain railroad tracks, that was an essential worker? I wonder. I don't know. I kind of doubt it. I don't know.
I don't know, but I do know a lot of them were forced to take the vaccine. And yeah, now we're seeing, you know, a lot of consequences from that.
Indeed. So, I mean, I think things are falling apart because, you know, the country is run for not for the interests of the American people, but it's run for the perceived self-interests of this Jewish element of the ruling class. And I usually talk about a Jewish-dominated ruling class, but really the agenda is not set by the entire ruling class so much. It's mainly set by the Jewish element of the ruling class. The non-Jewish element of the ruling class gets to share in the power and the privileges, but the actual direction, the actual policies and priorities are overwhelmingly, in my estimation, overwhelmingly established by the Jewish element of the ruling class. And so I think that if you have policies and priorities which are at odds with the interests of the population, then you should expect trains to derail and bridges to collapse and probably planes to fall out of the sky and all sorts of other things as we plummet like a bat out of hell, like we're in a handbasket to hell on our way to utopia.
Yeah, from hell to Yankee Jew utopia. I don't know, yeah. Something like that. Yeah, remember a few months ago, maybe over a year ago, I don't remember when, but I showed you a video of this foreigner in China, this British guy, comparing the infrastructure of China to the infrastructure of America, and how China's was all built up and futuristic and developed, and America's was just falling apart, and, you know, it was filthy, and there was, you know, crime everywhere, and then things were collapsing. Yeah.
And he's not the first person to make that observation.
No, and he won't be the last either.
So. Yeah. I'm trying to remember, who was it, like 5 or 6 years ago, that Tucker Carlson was saying that type of thing even? I can't remember if it was Tucker Carlson in specific, but I do remember somebody saying, yeah, if you go through an airport in China, it looks shiny and brand new, and if you go through O'Hare Airport or LaGuardia or whatever, it's falling apart.
Yeah, that was that Jewish comedian on HBO, Bill Maher. He was the one who made that video, and you know, I mean, I don't like Bill Maher one bit, but I mean, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day, so.
Okay, well, there was an article in the Oh, well, by the way, I do want to say, I do want to give a shout out to Punxsutawney Phil. I think Punxsutawney Phil did an excellent job filling in for me last week. And he mentioned that he said the Daily Stormer was the second most trusted name in balloon news. I think it might be the first. I mean, it's a very good source of balloon news.
Well, he said yours was the first. So
yeah. But I'm too modest to say that. I would never say that myself. But that's Phil's opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, there was an article in the Daily Stormer, and it is titled something like America sends, what was it? America sends so-and-so. Oh, America sends rowdy guy to China. No, America sends rowdy guy to Taiwan to start a war. Was that it? I'm getting closer.
Sir. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, America sends Mr. Rowdy to Taiwan to provoke shooting war.
Okay. Okay, I was pretty close. And who is Mr. Rowdy? It is Michael S. Oh, what was his last name? Chase. Michael S. Chase, like Chase Manhattan Bank. Michael S. Chase. And I did a little bit of looking into it. He doesn't have a Wikipedia page, or not one that I could find. And I think that's because he's young. I think he's very young and at the very start of his career. Yet, was he Deputy Assistant Secretary of State or Assistant Secretary of State for China Affairs? Something like that. And when I did find a couple of bios of him, one from the Defense Department. Oh, so he's not Assistant Secretary of State, Assistant Secretary of Defense. So I found one from the Defense Department. I'm pretty sure that was what it was. And he has advanced degrees, I guess a PhD and master's, from the School of Advanced International Studies, which is a graduate school of John Hopkins University, which is right on the on Pennsylvania Avenue between the Capitol and the White House. It's just like a horrible neocon place. And then his undergraduate degree is from Brandeis University. Oh God, Brandeis! What do you know about Brandeis University?
Well, I do know Brandeis was a Jewish last name, and there was some Jewish figure in the past. His name was Louis Brandeis.
Thank you.
But there was something that.
Oh, he was a Supreme Court justice.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. First, I don't know if he was the first Jewish Supreme Court justice. He was. I'm pretty sure the first Ashkenazi one. There might have been a Sephardic one at some point, or maybe not. But he was a Jewish activist, and he was involved in founding this university named after him. I forgot Lewis. I couldn't remember the name. I was thinking maybe it was Shlomo or Yitzhak or something, but no, Lewis Brandeis. And I was actually just at Brandeis University not that long ago, and it's a very Jewish school now, and it's explicitly Jewish. I mean, it is a school that it was founded to advance Jewish principles and this type of thing. Because oh God, back in the 100 years ago, there was a cap on Jewish enrollment in Ivy League schools of 15%. Oh God, 15%! We can only be 500% overrepresented. Well, anyway, so they have Brandeis, and Brandeis is about 35-40% Jewish. So you look at him and you think, oh, well, then maybe he's not Jewish. But then when you consider the non-Jews at Brandeis, most of them are either Hispanic or Black or Asian, and he's not none of those. And then you look at his face, and yeah, he's a Jew. He also worked for the Rand Corporation for a while.
A Jewish child of the military industrial complex.
So that's who's being sent over. Now, I don't know a whole lot about him. I did look at a list of his publications. He's got some publications. It's easy for these Jewish academics to get published. And I looked at some of the titles, and it was like, titles like Supporting Japan in Their Effort to Thwart Chinese Militarism, this type of thing. It was all like about taking on China threat, China militarism, and this kind of stuff. He's getting sent over to Taiwan, and I don't know what they're going to talk about. I don't know what's going on with that, but Taiwan is the focus right now. There are other approaches to a war with China, and a few years back they were doing the whole Antifa insurrection in Hong Kong, where Antifa were going around smashing windows and setting old people on fire, literally. And then, of course, there's the whole business in the Uyghurs in Xinjiang. And, you know, honestly, some of these Uyghur facilities that they would show, they didn't look so bad. And also, when you'd see the Chinese characters, because most people see these things and they can't read the Chinese. The Chinese characters, it wasn't saying work makes you free or whatever. It was just like, it's just the Institute of Technical Studies and this type of stuff. It all seemed very innocuous. But whatever. I'm more concerned with our own Uyghurs. China can deal with their Uyghurs. I'm more concerned about our Uyghurs. So, but Taiwan seems to be the avenue of approach. So I wanted to talk on today. People have a good understanding. Who lives in Taiwan?
Well, a good portion of the Han Chinese people. The island is majority Han Chinese, over 90%.
Majority. How much? Yeah. How much?
It's 90 more.
90 what? 90 what percent?
Like 98% or 99%, even more than mainland China.
Yeah. What is mainland China in terms of its Han population?
Like 90%. Because
it's about 90%, right?
Yeah, because you got to understand there's 55 other minority groups, ethnic minorities spread out because China's a vast land, and 90% Han Chinese is already a very, very, you know, very homogenous for a nation that big.
I think extremely homogenous.
I think Russia is like, what, 78% Slavic, white Russian Slavic?
You might say 78% Slavic. It's about maybe 70% Russian.
Yeah, white Russian Slavic.
There's other kinds of Slavic. So yeah, 90% is huge. So what are the big minorities in China?
Oh, well, you have the how should I do this? You want to go from east to west? Well, you got the Manchus in the northeast. You got the Mongols in the north central and Inner Mongolia, and then of course the ones you hear about all the time in the Western media. You got the Uyghurs, you know, out in Xinjiang.
There's a fair amount. There's right. What is for Xinjiang? What's the population of Xinjiang? It's like a few tens of millions, right?
Yeah, I mean it's a vast, you know, area.
It's an area. It's bigger than Alaska.
Yeah, it's huge. It's very, yeah. It's very, very, it's not dense at all.
And an area, so when we say large in Alaska, we're saying like two or three times as large as Texas.
Right.
And it's got some people. It's sparse. It's not as sparse as Mongolia, but it's sparse.
I don't know about
Inner Mongolia, but Outer Mongolia, which the Mongolian Republic, that's very sparse, only a few million people. But Xinjiang, I don't know exactly. But so you got, and then you got Tibet as you go around south, and then there's some other groups like who lives in the Yinchuan.
Where?
Yinchuan. It's some sort of it's like an autonomous province, Yinchuan. And then like in the south, just north of Vietnam, is it Hunan?
I'm sorry, not Yunnan. What is it? Guangxi. I think Guangxi.
Oh yeah, Guangxi. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who lives there?
I forgot the name of the minority group, but there's a minority group there that lives there. I forgot the name of them. They're not that many.
Yeah. But here's the thing. So, and those groups added up together, plus the ones that we didn't name, you know, there's a few million Koreans who live in Manchuria.
A handful of Russians too.
A handful of Russians. Yeah, there are various groups. And when you add them up together, it's a big absolute number. You know, it's over 100 million. But still, the Han Chinese are over 90% of the population. But none of these minority groups that we mentioned, Tibetans or Mongols or Manchus, are present in any real numbers in Taiwan.
No.
So who's in Taiwan?
Whatever the Aborigine people.
Yeah. And I went there. So there's a few different – you could say there's a few different groups, but they're pretty similar to each other. And I went 40 years ago when I went to Taiwan, I went and visited one of their – you know, it's just like if you go to Arizona, you can visit the Navajo, right? And, you know, you can – if you go to, Tennessee, you can visit the Creek Indians. You can go to these reservations. They're tourist places. So I went to a tourist place for one of these Aboriginal groups. And these groups are – they're actually very interesting. They only make up somewhere between 1% and 2% of the population, and they're the only significant minority in Taiwan. When I say minority, non-Han Chinese group. And they – actually, they are ancestral to all of the – Filipinos and Indonesians and Malaysians, and at least partially ancestral to like the Polynesians and some other groups, and even Madagascar. If you look at the languages spoken all throughout Indonesia and Polynesia, and even as far as Madagascar off the coast of Africa, these languages all descend from the languages spoken in Taiwan by the Aborigines. Just the Indo-European languages all came from, like north of the Black Sea somewhere. These groups, and you look at the people, and they look like Filipinos, and that's about 1 or 2%. And the thing is, they were the majority of the population on Taiwan until only a few centuries ago, right? The large-scale Chinese migration to Taiwan took place about the same time as the English settlement of the east coast of the United States. It happened at about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And like with the English settlement of the United States, the English became the dominant population, and original Indians in the United States became a small minority, and you can bemoan that, but it's a historical fact, and it happened at about the same time as colonized and took over Taiwan, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you would think that the Chinese have about the same claim on Taiwan as European descended people have on America, which most of us think is a pretty legitimate claim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just as legitimate, if not more legitimate, than the Anglo colonization of North America. Not colonization.
Yeah,
expansion.
Well, it's a lot closer to it's a lot closer to China too.
Yeah, I mean, it's closer to China. I mean, Taiwan is more Chinese than America is English, so.
Yeah, and so here's the thing. People who are talking about Taiwan independence, they're not talking about independence for this Aboriginal group, right?
Mm-hmm.
Has nothing to do with it.
No, it has nothing to do with human rights for the native Aboriginals of the island of Taiwan. No, nothing to do with that.
Yeah. So, you'll hear people talk about, like, Tibet for the Tibetans or Xinjiang for the Uyghurs, this type of thing, right? But this is not at all the dynamic of what's going on in Taiwan. It's not like they're saying, like they are saying, ethnic Chinese should get the hell out of Tibet. When I say they, people in Hollywood say that, and people in the media say that the ethnic Chinese should get out of Xinjiang, right?
People in all the Jewish old organs of the American Empire are saying that.
Right. But they're not saying ethnic Chinese should get out of Taiwan and leave it to the tiny remnant, Malay population. They're not saying that.
No.
What are they saying? Well, I mean, what are they saying?
They're saying that number one, they won't want to divide the Han Chinese population into two, and number two, what they're saying is that Taiwan should renounce its own China. The Chinese that live in Taiwan, the Han Chinese that live in Taiwan, should renounce their Chinese identity and their 5,000 years of ancestry, and be their own people, so to speak, and that they should adopt, liberal values, liberal democracy, which amounts to nothing but gay anal and trannies. That's what they're saying. It's an ideological thing, and it's about system. It's a war of ideological systems.
Yeah, and so if you look at the history of Taiwan, okay, so there, for most of recorded human history, and for most of Chinese history, Taiwan was not part of China. For most of Chinese history, Taiwan was the home of these aboriginal groups.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With a Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
Recorded human history. And for most of Chinese history, Taiwan was not part of China. For most of Chinese history, Taiwan was the home of these aboriginal groups. And then, but nobody's saying that Taiwan should become now the home of these aboriginal groups. So that has nothing to do with it. Then you look, who else has ruled Taiwan in relatively recent times? Who else?
Well, you had the Japanese. Well, let me just start before that. Okay, in the 1600s.
Go for it.
I think around the 1600s, you had the Chinese general, a hero. His name was Zheng Chengong, and he basically took back the island of Taiwan from the Dutch. You know, there were Dutch invaders, Dutch pirates that were using Taiwan as their, you know, one of their bases to do piracy against Chinese ships and all that.
Mm-hmm. And Zheng Chengong,
the Dutch. And, you know, which is why Formosa is another name for it. But that's why Zheng Chengong led a Chinese army, landed on the island of Taiwan and drove out the Dutch from that island and reclaimed it as part of China.
But it really reclaimed it? I mean, there might have been some tenuous claim on it, but, you know, at the time the Dutch and Portuguese arrived, there may have been, like, Chinese trading posts. But the island was inhabited primarily still by these aboriginal groups. Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as if China has the long claim on it. I'm actually, there's actually some method to my madness here. What I'm trying to point out is that even though Taiwan geographically hasn't been united with China for such a long period of time by Chinese standards. I mean, it hasn't been part of China as long as, say, the south coast of China, or as long as the interior, or, you know, the deserts near Mongolia, or even Xinjiang area, right? Even though it hasn't been in geographically integrated as long as these areas, the people who live in Taiwan now are almost exclusively Chinese people, and here's the thing, it's not, you know, if this area had been populated by Chinese people 2,000 years ago, right? And it wasn't. But if it had been populated by Chinese people 2,000 years ago, you might think, well, over the past 2,000 years, they could have drifted apart, right? But mm-hmm. a big hunk of the people in Taiwan went to Taiwan with Chiang Kai-shek a mere, 74 years ago, 1949, right?
Yeah, basically what happened was when after Japan lost the war in World War II and the Allies won, Taiwan was given back to the Republic of China. But then the Chinese Civil War kicked off, and, you know, the Mao and the communists, you know, with the People's Republic of China, defeated Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalists, the Kuomintang, you know, when the Republic of China and Mao, you know, communists ended up driving the nationalists out of the mainland into the island of Taiwan. And that's where, you know, this split comes from, is based an un, you could say, like, kind of a, an un, you know, there was never any kind of treaty or anything signed between the two sides, and you know, to this day.
Treaty signed what? Between the two sides over, wake of World War II, you're saying?
Yeah, like saying that, you know, like, for example, there's two Koreas, there's North Korea and there's South Korea, or rather, the Democratic Republic, People's Republic of Korea, DPRK, and then the Republic of Korea. Are okay, but in China and Taiwan, that was never the mainland China and Taiwan. That was never agreed upon that there would be two Chinas.
Right,
both sides claimed that they were the real China. You had the Republic of China on the island of Taiwan, and then the People's Republic of China in mainland China.
And so the people Taiwan had been not integrated into China until fairly recently. And really, I mean, there have been trading posts maybe predating this, but when the Portuguese and the Dutch managed to sail, you know, they sailed around. Oh, it's actually pretty interesting. You know, the Portuguese sailed around the Cape of Good Hope in South Africa in 1498. And then they just sailed into the Indian Ocean and they got to Macau, just a few years later, and they set up a trading post in Macau. And the Dutch weren't that far behind. And so you had the Portuguese and the Dutch over in the 1500s. The Dutch somewhat later. The Dutch were a little more dominant, maybe in the early 1600s. And at this time, the Taiwan was still mainly inhabited by what you could call it, Malay group, the Aboriginal group. And you had Chinese traders with them. The Chinese were trading with them, and so they had some outposts, and the Dutch were there, and the Portuguese had been there. Yeah, I don't mean to be obnoxious or annoying. What I'm really getting at is that the Taiwan hadn't been integrated into the Chinese Empire until relatively late, but then it was, and the thing about it being integrated late is it means these Chinese people living in Taiwan are people who settled Taiwan relatively recently. I mean, it's contempt. It's.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Honestly, this stuff works. Nick, easy to take capsules. For those who can't handle the liquid drops, easy to take Extendivite capsules do the same job. Karoka fam, works great. Like Extendivite very much. Seems to work as advertised. Thanks. Arlene, 5 stars. Love this product, Extendivite. Terry W., 5 stars. Can't say enough. Great product. Freya, 5 stars. I just ordered another. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
These Chinese people living in Taiwan are people who settled Taiwan relatively recently. I mean, it's basically contemporaneous with the British or European settlement of North America. So it, you know, you started getting it in the 1600s, the 1700s. It's ongoing in the 1800s, and then that last big wave in 1949. So these are very Chinese people. The people who live in Taiwan are very Chinese. They're not people who like had a common ancestor 2,000 years ago. These are people who came over very recently, and so, you know, even the language, like the language of government, is Mandarin, just like on the mainland. The bulk of the population speaks a dialect or Chinese language that's often referred to as Taiwanese, but isn't it the same as Fujianese?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's Hokkienese. You know, that's what the province of Fujian, especially the city of Xiamen, you know, which is off the coast of China, in Fujian, that's the same dialect that they speak in Taiwan.
It's the same dialect. So there's no language or dialect of Chinese that's unique to Taiwan. There's nothing unique about the Chinese in Taiwan, other than in the Chinese Civil War, they wound up getting kind of orphaned.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I'm trying. People think, oh, Taiwanese are different people from Chinese. They're not different people. And to the extent the history is different, and it does have a different history, you know, you could probably make a better case for Taiwan, you know, like if it's going to be independent, then it would be independent and you're giving it back to the 2% Aboriginal people, or you're going to reincorporate it into Japan, or you're going to turn it back into a Dutch colony. It just, it does it has zero history as an independent country.
Exactly, none whatsoever.
Yeah. And okay, one last thing. And I'm sorry if I'm like talking, I'm all excited and obnoxious and annoying. But one last thing, is there a consensus amongst the people in Taiwan that they even want to have independence?
No, not really. I mean, you know, you might have some young college students who are being, you know, educated in the West or by Western-funded programs, and they might be naive and thinking, oh, yeah, you know, Taiwan independence. But, I mean, yeah, the most people, most of the, you know, workers and laborers and you know, the, you know, just the putong, you know, regular folks, no. There's no, they don't have any desire for Taiwanese independence, whatever the hell that even means.
Yeah. There is, okay, so, and you've been having these Taiwan elections. I mean, you were having elections in Taiwan for a long time, but they became a little bit more meaningful in the late 1980s. And then you have the DPP. And the DPP, which is the party of the current cat lady president, Tsai Ing-wen.
Vegetable English. That's what Tsai Ing-wen means.
Yeah, vegetable English. Vegetable English writing or vegetable English literature. And she is a vegetable. And she's a cat lady. And, you know, it's insane what's happening to the country. Because the options for the country, and everybody knows this, the options are declare independence and be trounced in a war. Or don't declare independence and continue to operate with self-rule, I guess you would call it, with autonomy. So don't declare independence, maintain autonomy. And what do you want to do with that autonomy? And most people, sooner or later, would like to be reunited. Certainly, even though the DPP wins elections like every other cycle, they've been cycling in and out of government, and they're almost certainly going to lose the next elections. They lost pretty big time in the regional and like the local elections a few months ago. They're almost certainly going to lose the next elections. But even within the DPP, there's never been a consensus to declare independence. There might be amongst many in the DPP a desire to someday be independent and a longing to be independent. It would be nice if we could be independent, but there's never been anywhere near a consensus on declaring independence. And this push, because they understand the consequences. The Declaration of Independence is basically a betrayal of an unwritten but very real agreement that there's not going to be any kind of military action as long as you don't declare independence. I mean, that's been like that for decades.
Even then, even if it really got to so low to that point to where the Taiwanese ruling party was so bold to declare independence, China would just, you know, blockade the islands around the waters with their ship and prevent any, you know, export or import from going in and out, you know, and basically crash the economy.
And they have the capability of doing that.
As China, I can almost guarantee you, China will not be the one that fires the first shot if hot water is to break out. It's you know, the American Empire, you know, through Taiwan or somewhere there, that would fire the first shot. China will not be the one firing the first shot because they don't want to. Why would China want to unleash hell, use the PLA and unleash hell on the island of Taiwan? I mean, those are Chinese people. They're killing their own people. Why would they want to do that?
They wouldn't want to do that. Even less so than Putin. I mean, Putin obviously didn't want to unleash war on Ukraine. A, he waited for 8 years. B, when he did start this special military operation, it was very cautious and very timid, and he was bending over backwards not to cause civilian harm. And even to this day, now he's going to probably, the day that this broadcast airs, or maybe the next day, he's going to have a big speech and he's going to make big announcements. But I don't know what they are yet. But the fact is, you know, in spite of what Chlamydia Harris might say or what CNN might say, there haven't been trillions of war atrocities by the Russians. I mean, the Russians have been very cautious. And the Chinese would have every reason to be even more so because, you know, there's like a certain amount of differentiation between Russians and Ukrainians, especially Russians and Western Ukrainians. There's a certain amount of it, much more so than there is between the Chinese on the mainland and the Chinese in on Taiwan. But the other thing is that the Chinese, the mainland China and Taiwan, until recently had excellent economic relations, excellent relations. The rise of China as an economic power was triggered by Taiwanese investment into Fujian province first and foremost, and then the rest of China. They've had excellent relations, and Taiwan has a lot of very important industrial assets, and why would China want to destroy them? The Chinese and mainland economy and the Taiwanese economy even now are still pretty well integrated.
Exactly.
But who doesn't have a lot to lose? Obviously, the Taiwanese have a lot to lose by a shooting war. The mainland Chinese have a lot to lose, and they both know they have a lot to lose. Who at least doesn't think they have a lot to lose from a war?
The American Empire.
Yeah.
More specifically, the Jews who run the American Empire, and specifically also the military-industrial complex of America.
And, you know, I said very cautiously, very carefully, I said, who doesn't think they have a lot to lose? Honestly, the Jews have a lot to lose. The American military-industrial complex, whatever you want to say, America has a lot to lose from a war with China, but they don't understand it. They're kind of oblivious to it.
They don't think they have a lot to lose, but they do.
So these Jews who run the State Department, run our foreign policy, it's my contention that they have spent almost their entire careers in the unipolar moment, and they haven't gotten the memo yet that what their fellow tribesmen have done to the United States in particular and other Western countries has made them very, very weak. And China and Russia are serious countries, and they haven't been engaging in these self-destructive policies, at least not nearly as much. I mean, both countries made some mistakes with the COVID stuff, but otherwise, I mean, they're not engaging in affirmative action against their own people. They're not engaging in the promotion of gayness and trannyism. They're not bringing in infinity people from random third world countries. They're not doing these things. They're not attacking their own people. And if you're not attacking your own people, you can get stronger. And if you are attacking your own people, like they are in the United States, you're going to get weaker. And they just don't, the Jews who run the country just don't understand it because they're not as smart as they think they are. And they're not as smart as a lot of the audience might think they are.
No, they've got a lot of chutzpah. It's just full of hot air. And it's, I mean, they're never going to understand it until they are fully deposed of power, in my opinion.
Now, Cato, you've been to Taiwan, haven't you?
Yeah, I have.
And you've been to the mainland too, right?
Yeah, I've been to the mainland.
Okay. And I have too, but I don't speak Chinese that well, and I was there a lot longer ago. How different do they seem?
How different do they what?
Yeah, how different does China and the mainland or Taiwan and the mainland seem, both in terms of the people, you know, and their attitudes, and also in terms of the infrastructure, what you see, the physical stuff.
Well, I was in the mainland in the, let's say, the mid-2000s, like 2006, that era, somewhere around there. And then I was in Taiwan more recently. So obviously, you know, at the time, I'm sure the mainland was probably, you know, developing more than Taiwan was already. But, I mean, other than that, and, you know, I'm pretty sure, I'm not just pretty sure, I know for a fact both parts of China are very developed now over the past, you know, 10, 15 years. But in terms of the people and the culture, it's all Chinese. That's all it is. I mean, you know, it's identical almost. You know, yeah, they might have some regional, you know, customs and regional cuisines, but it's like, you know, we got that here in the United States too. Yeah, but it's very, very similar. I mean, there's, you know, Taiwan is China and the mainland is China.
If you were like, did you ever see Star Trek? Like the original Star Trek, and you know the teleporters?
Yeah, I've seen a few episodes.
Okay. So if you were teleported and you didn't know whether you were teleported to like some, you know, street in a Taiwan city or a mainland city, but you're just teleported somewhere, how long would it take you to tell the difference between whether you were like in a back street in Taipei or a back street in Shanghai?
Well, that depends. Do you know Chinese traditional characters and Chinese simplified characters?
Right. Yeah, because this is the one thing about mainland China where I think I would rather have the Taiwanese or the – not the Taiwanese, but the nationalists like conquer them, because that was an atrocity. The Uyghurs I can deal with. I can deal with all this other stuff, but they genocided Chinese characters.
Yeah, and that was during Mao. That was during Mao under the Cultural Revolution, when his thing was, oh yeah, we got to get rid of this old, you know, old way of doing things. And in fact, I don't know if this is true or not. I mean, this could be just, I don't know, Western propaganda, but there was something where Mao actually wanted to get rid of Chinese characters altogether and have English alphabet.
I believe that's the case.
He just wanted to replace them with you know, Latin alphabet letters, you know, pinyin as you know, part of the Chinese language, which would have been a real atrocity. But I think, you know, when that came to an end, they just said, no, let's simplify the Chinese characters instead.
Yeah. Okay. So you'd be able to tell the difference because of the Chinese characters. If they were the more complicated based characters, you're in Taiwan or maybe Hong Kong. And if they're the simplified atrocity characters, then you're in the mainland.
Exactly.
But you have to know that too. There.
Most people,
but honestly, some of the characters are a lot different, but a lot of them really didn't change much. So, okay, if you didn't notice that, if aside from that, how long would it take you to notice a difference?
Do I get to ask somebody?
Maybe you could ask somebody. I don't know, because like I haven't been in either place since the 1980s, and in the 1980s, Taiwan was kind of like grimy. And it wasn't like impoverished, but it certainly wasn't affluent. It was just kind of like in the middle. And China mainland was like Africa style poverty, more or less.
Yeah.
Now I think, you know, they've both changed quite a bit. So that's why I'm asking you, because I haven't been there for so long.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're both, you know, very developed now. And it's like, yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah, I mean, it's just like, well, maybe not. I was going to compare it to like American Chinatowns, but no, that's totally different. I mean, you really can't, you know, the people look the same, you know. I mean, they both, you know, there's cars everywhere in both, you know, Taipei or Beijing.
Cars everywhere, not bicycles.
Yeah, well, they got scooters too. I think China, though, I know they banned a lot of those because they were causing so many car crashes. Taiwan hasn't been, you know, the people that ride on the motor scooters, and they all climb to the very front of the traffic light, and I mean, kind of annoying.
That's what I saw. I saw little motor scooters in Taiwan, and I saw bicycles everywhere in the mainland.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, yeah, but you know, today it's, you know, I mean, you'll still see people riding bicycles. People ride bicycles here, but you know, they ride it more for like recreational, as opposed to because that's their only mode of transportation.
The other thing, okay, what I remember is, in terms of the difference, I don't know. Some of our listeners might have been in the Boy Scouts. I don't know if you were in the Boy Scouts, but like if you're in the Boy Scouts and you had a camp out, and then you're sleeping in the tent and you don't sleep very well and it's cold outside and maybe it's raining and some water gets in, you wake up and you're all groggy, right? And you're walking around, you're all groggy. The people in the mainland seemed all groggy, like on a Boy Scout camp out. Because probably their houses were cold and maybe they weren't sleeping well. And whereas the people in Taiwan, you know, they seemed like they were a lot more comfortable. I'm just talking about at the time. I assume that's not really a differentiating point today.
No, one thing I will say, though, the cities in China definitely have more skyscrapers than the ones in Taiwan.
Really?
At one point, Taiwan actually had the tallest building in the world, believe it or not, Taipei 101 in Taipei. But then that was later beat by the Shanghai World Financial Center. Okay, maybe not. Today, like, I think 8 of the 10 tallest buildings in the world are in China.
Yeah, so, how about Dubai? Doesn't Dubai have a big one?
Dubai, I know, has the tallest one, you know, that Burj Khalifa, whatever, that you know, needle thing. And then, of course, China, second tallest one, which is the Shanghai Tower in Shanghai. And then China's got some really tall ones, too. There's a really tall one in Shenzhen. I forget what the building's called.
And Shenzhen, which is just almost adjacent to Hong Kong. And it basically was in the I was there. It was nothing. It was just basically a customs port or something. When I was there, it was nothing. I just got my passport stamped, and I got on a train to Guangdong.
To the side of the summer,
are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste by going to rbnhemppaste.com. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Standing 6'4", weighing 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Or something. When I was there, it was nothing. I just got my passport stamped, and I got on a train to Guangdong or Guangzhou, and it was nothing. But now, isn't it bigger than New York City as a city? And nobody's ever heard of it. Shenzhen, most people have not. But I think it's got more. It's got like 10 million people.
Yeah, it's huge. It's a huge city, and you know, very dense too. Okay, yeah, Shenzhen. Okay, here we go. So, tallest buildings in China. Okay, so the tallest building in China, number one, is Shanghai Tower. That's the third tallest building in the world. I guess recently Malaysia just built one taller, I guess, this year. Number one is still the one in Dubai. And then, okay, the second tallest building in China is the Ping An International Financial Center. That's in Shenzhen. That's number five. That's the second tallest building. And then the third tallest building is the Guangzhou CTF Finance Center in Guangzhou, and also the Tianjin CTF Finance Center in Tianjin, and those are both at number eight. And then number 10, you have China Zun, that's in Beijing. And then, of course, number 11 is Taipei 101.
Wow.
So, anyway, I'm kind of a skyscraper nerd. I can be. But
the skyscrapers are amazing. They're very amazing.
You know yeah. Which country was the most significant in inventing the skyscraper?
Who? What?
The United States.
Yeah, yeah. The Empire State Building is, I guess, it's 90 years old now. I think it's from about 1933. It's from the early 30s. I was there when it was the tallest building in the world, and then I was in the World Trade Center when it was the tallest, and then I went into the Sears Tower when it was the tallest in Chicago. I like tall buildings. I like going up there and looking around, for sure. Mm-hmm. But notice that none of those buildings are 10 anymore.
None of those buildings what?
Yeah. What's this? Oh, none of the American buildings are even in the top 10 anymore.
Well, there is one, the One World Trade Center.
Oh, is that? Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't been in that.
But that's including the spire, too. You know, I don't know if you can really include that or not.
You know, I just drove by it recently. I was in New York, and I didn't pay much attention. Okay.
Oh, that's hard.
Well, anyway, I guess we got kind of nerdy on these skyscrapers. It was kind of fun. One of these days, we'll have to get nerdy on, like, trains or something, because I like trains. Bullet trains and whatnot, but I think we're at the end of our program.
Yeah, I mean, it was good to get a little bit fun in our knowledge of skyscrapers, just with all the commotion and this evil going on out there. I mean, it's always good to have a little bit, relax a little and just kind of enjoy the few things left to enjoy in life. So,
but I don't know if I drove it home, but what I'm trying to say is, why do Americans need to try to make Chinese people independent from other Chinese people? Why is it important to us? Why does our State Department or Pentagon send over some Jew to try to get one group of Chinese people to declare independence from another group? I don't get it.
Yeah, well, we know why. Because the American Empire, the Judeo-American Empire, wants hegemony and unipolarism over the whole world, and they can't. They're afraid of the multipolar world led by China and then right. Russia.
Well, they're on a losing streak. They're on a losing streak, and we all have to be betting men in the long run. And I bet against the Jews. Okay. Well, thank you for joining me, Cato. And you can have the last word if you want.
Yeah, it's good to be back here. And I will see you next week, Dr. Slattery. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Take care.
And I'll have another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.